Welcome to Hetai Rea Helenis Greek Club. We are reading Matthew 4, and I hope everyone appreciated the clever daily announcement that I put in this week. You know, with your Nestle Aland or on it. Real men and women read Greek when they don't have to. Greek Club. Matthew chapter 4, we read verse 1 last time, which is kind of the introduction to the pericope. There's different ways of structuring it. Happily, there's obviously three temptations, right? Kind of picking up from verse 1, then Jesus was led up into the desert by the Spirit. So it's the Spirit's idea that Jesus go up. And the purpose, however, is to bring him into conflict with Satan, right? So because Satan is the second agent expressed, I think we should go ahead and translate it. Peirasthenai is not just to be tested, but to be tempted, because that's what Satan does. Satan doesn't just test people. He tries to get them to do bad stuff, right? So, okay, verse 2. Kai nes jusas hemeras tesarakanta, kai niktas tesarakanta, histeron epenasen. So we could translate, and I think a temporal translation works well for this aorist participle from nes tuo, which means I fast. So after he had fasted. And now we have a nice example of a common phenomenon that is how Greek expresses the question how long something lasted. And the way you do that is you take a time word like day and you put it in the accusative case and it answers the question how long. And so we don't need a preposition. We don't have to say for 40 days and 40 nights. We just say accusative 40 days and 40 nights. And so this is the accusative of the extent of time. Will.
You think you use the accusative here instead of dative or genitive to express, you know, the whole time, not just, you know, sometime, the whole time?
Well, yeah, he's emphasizing how long it took. Absolutely. Wow. Yep. It's just a natural way to do it in Greek. If he had wanted to say, in a 40-day period, something like that, then he would have used a dative.
Okay. Right. And a genitive,
A genitive would have said it was within the boundaries of 40 days that Jesus was tempted. But this actually emphasizes how long the temptation lasted. Right. So there's this kind of different nuance. And again, it's very subtle. All you got to do is put the time word, whether it's day or hour or year or whatever it is, in a different case, and it works. So. At the end of the verse, actually, we have another, again, fairly common thing. It's not in the elementary grammars too much. Histeron is just an adjective. The dictionary form is histeros. It means second or next. But this is, once again, we've seen it already, the accusative neuter singular adjective, and it's acting like an adverb. So, accusative neuter singular. So, later, secondly, he hungered from peinao. Okay. By the way, peinao is one of these contract verbs where the alpha in the stem does not lengthen to eta. And so even though this is a weak aorist, you can see the sigma on the weak aorist stem. You might, if you're thinking about the rules for vowel contraction, you might expect epenasen with an eta, but it just stays alpha and that's just the way it does. So good, and this sets up the first temptation. Okay, questions about verse 2? So participle and then aorist indicative made verb, right? Yeah, Joe.
You said after.
Yes, for nestusas,
I know some commentaries have differed on whether this is after coordinated or in coordinated. Is there a reason that after is because of aorist?
Yes, that's kind of the rule of thumb, which doesn't always work. But yeah, aorist participle will tend to be one step back in time prior to the main verb.
Could you say during?
You could, although you might expect present stem participle this. Then you might say during or while. Now again, it's only rule of thumb, and there are times when the context, you know, forces you one way or the other. Absolutely. So, right. It seems a little unnecessary to say he was hungry. But that's what it says, right? So,
hey.
Jim, hey, how are you? Shalom Lekha. That was Hebrew, by the way.
Shalom Lekha, yeah, very good.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, good. Okay, verse 3. Kai pros elthon ha pe radzon e penauto e huyas e tu theu e pehena hoi lithoi hutoi artoi genontai. Now we have another aorist participle. This is from pros erkamai, pros elthon, and the referent is the tempter right next to it. You can see that the participle is clearly in predicate position in relation to its referent. And then the main verb is apen, he said. So you could render this one temporally or something like that, but this looks to me like it fits into what Dr. Vels in a homely way calls the bang-bang participle, or what Daniel Wallace in a homely way calls the piggyback participle. So you just translate it as if it were a past time indicative. And the tempter approached and said to him. Okay? And now we have the question. A plus the indicative, followed by almost anything in the then clause, is just a present particular conditional sentence. Huias does not have the article, but given the context, namely the prior paragraph where the father has not said, this one is one of my beloved sons, but I've got a bunch of them, right? I think we can, from context, decide that huias here is definite, not indefinite. And if the context leads in that direction, what you would expect when the predicate nominative precedes the linking verb, as it does here, Matthew, that it would lack the article. The name of the rule? Anybody? Caldwell's rule. Right. Right. There will not be a quiz. So you don't have to translate it, if you are a son of God. No. Satan is not asking Jesus to doubt whether he's God's son. He seems to be testing his understanding of what kind of son he'll be. Although this is theologically a very rich text, and there's more than one, you know, more than one way to frame it. So we can translate, first of all, huios definitely. And I also think we should avoid what is a fairly common suggestion. People will commonly say this kind of conditional sentence could be translated since. See? Now it's true that in context you can tell whether or not the speaker thinks the if clause is true. In context you can tell whether the speaker thinks the if clause is true. But I think if you translate since, you lose the rhetorical force of a conditional sentence. See? It's just as easy, and I think it's more helpful, to translate it if. So, if you are the Son of God, say or tell. Now we have a hina clause after a verb of speaking or commanding or exhorting, in which case it's probably not expressing purpose, but probably expressing the content of what's said. So it's like a hati clause. Not purpose, but just hati. Say that these stones become bread. And of course the verb genontai is subjunctive just because it's in a hina clause. And it's the aorist subjunctive of genomai, which is deponent, which explains the ntai ending. So here's the first temptation. If you are the Son of God, colloquially, tell these stones to become literally breads. Right? Good. Questions? Comments about the foist temptation?
Is that the normal construction when you tell somebody to do something?
It is easy to do it this way. Yeah, followed by hina clause. Yep, Matthew likes this fairly well. I don't know, there's about a dozen or 15 examples. So if I were Dr. Lessing, I'd know them all by heart. Yeah. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's memory. Yeah. So, all right. Any questions on verse 3? All right. Now we have, again, kind of a Semitic idiom. But he, notice the little change of subject construction where ha, the article, actually is acting like a pronoun. But he, answering, said, Gegraptai, uk ep arto mono zesetai ha anthropos, al epi panti remata ek poru omeno diastamatos theu. But he answering said, it stands written. It has been written and is in a written condition. A person will not live on the basis of bread alone. Rather, I'll repeat the verb, a person will live upon the basis of every word. Now we'll take the participle as just attributive adjectival. What kind of a word? Every word which journeys out through the mouth of God. A quotation from Deuteronomy 8:3, as you can tell from the side note. Can somebody tell me the dictionary form from which zesetai comes?
Zao.
Zao, right? And it is deponent in its second principal part. So it goes zao zesemai. So it's a middle form, but it's active in meaning. So just a person not will live for himself or something like that, but just will live. By the way, sometimes people take this as an imperative, but Burton's book on moods and tenses in the Greek New Testament suggests actually that when Greek wants to use a future indicative with an imperatival force, it's almost always the second person, not third person. And in the context in Deuteronomy, this isn't a command. This is a statement. It's an indicative statement. Israel was supposed to learn that a person will not live. So I don't think we should take this as a command. We should take this as a statement. Say, Jesus knows the difference. It is written, this is the way it works. A person lives not by bread alone, but by every word that goes out through God's mouth. So. Okay, good. Questions? Greek is not all that hard, actually. Pretty straightforward, I think. Okay? All right. Verse 3. Now we had an interesting stylistic feature. We'll come to that in a second. Tata paralambane auton ha diabolos, eis tein ha gean palin. Kai este senautan epita pterygion tu hieru. And then we'll stop there. We have paralambane, which is a present indicative, active, right? We also have, interestingly, you see a flag on the play at este sen, and the variant reading is also an present indicative. To be sure, the first one is to be read, apparently. So it's a so-called historical present. Now the interesting thing, I think I might have mentioned this last time, although I can't remember. Matthew doesn't use the historical present very often, with the exception of the forms of lego. He will routinely have Jesus legoing something with a present indicative and pastime narrative. But he's pretty sparse with it. There are actually two pericopes where there are a cluster of historical presents. And the first one is this one, the temptation in the wilderness, and the second one is the temptation in the garden. So stylistically, I think Matthew is, I think that Matthew is deliberately sort of vividizing, if that's not a verb, it is now, you know, these two accounts. And again, it's really this kind of remarkable concentration. He's kind of underscoring in a stylistic way the importance of these two texts, so here and then in chapter 26. So having said that, you would normally just translate as a past indicative. Then the devil took him along into the holy city, and now we have the transitive use of histemi, Notice the weak aorist form, histimi, isn't this great, has two third principal parts, right? One of them is transitive, the other is intransitive. No, you don't have to know which one is which. That's my job at the moment. This is actually transitive. He stood him, right? On literally the little wing of the temple, and no, nobody knows exactly what this refers to. Okay. Is there a specific thing in the second temple, Herod's temple, that was called this? The answer is nobody knows. So it's apparently a high place, right? And verse 6, but any questions or comments? Again, the narrative is pretty easy. It's just aorist indicative, a few participles thrown in. I don't think so. Right. Okay. All right, pressing on. Verse 6. Kai lege auto, and he said, but literally says, another historical present to him. E huias e tu theu, bala se auton kato, gegraptai gar hati, tois angelois autu en teletai perisu, kai epi cheron aruzense, mepita pros kapse pros lithon tan parasu. And he says to him, if you are the Son of God. Now, bala is from what verb? Anybody? Balo, right? And it's liquid stem. This is the aorist, imperative, active, second singular. Throw yourself kato, below, down. For, I can quote the Bible too, right? For it stands in a written condition that to his angels... Entelētai is from entelomai, it's deponent. This is the future indicative, active third singular, or not active, but middle form. Entelētai, he will command to his angels about you, and upon the hands, arūzense. This is from, anybody?
Iro.
We have a lot of liquid stem verbs here. Maybe that's why they're in this text, because it's a demonic text. I was going to say the spirit just revealed that to me, but I don't know which spirit that was.
Now you're going to have to change your comment.
I think that's right. Well, it won't be the only thing that has to be changed. Yeah, see, the problem is that Iro goes to Aro with a circumflex. That's the second principal part. So this is just a future indicative active third plural. Upon the hands they will carry you or lift you. Mepita, now plus the subjunctive, expresses negative purpose. Lest, proskopsis is from proskopto, which means to strike against. And it's the aorist subjunctive active second singular. Lest you strike to a stone the foot of you. Right? And so the devil knows Psalm 91, verse 11, and he quotes it. And again, we won't go into theology per se, but that's how the Greek at least runs. Questions about that? Pretty, again, fairly straightforward, I think. Mm-hmm. Have to look up a few words, but other than that. Okay, good. Verse 7. Efe auto ha Jesus, palen gegraptai, uch ek peirase skirion tan theon su. Fa is an aorist form from feme. It's a me verb. It hardly ever shows up in the New Testament. Often it shows up in this form. And it's just translated like an aorist indicative. Jesus said to him. Again, it stands written. And now we have ek peirases, which is a future indicative, active, second singular. And this probably is with an imperatival force. So, don't tempt, or more woodenly, you will not, or you shall not. Can you actually tempt God? I don't think so, because you can't try to get God to do something that's wrong. But you can put him to the test. And especially in the Deuteronomic rehearsal of Israel's story here, what Israel did is they weren't sure if God was going to do right by them or not. And so they felt like they had the right to see what God would do. And you're not allowed to do that. Because God always does what's right. And he always keeps his promises. That's why trying to ek peirazo God is wrong. You're actually calling into question his nature as God. You're not allowed to put God to the test. Right? They're not trying to get God to do something wrong, but you're not allowed to question his goditude.
Right? Which is, is that another new word?
Why not? His God height. We've got some good German speakers here. Right? So don't do that. That's what Israel did. And of course, what's going on here, of course, is that Israel failed. That's why Jesus has come to save his people from their sins, right? So how does he do that? In a number of ways, but he goes actually back into the desert. He repeats the story of Israel, but he doesn't fail. Which I would like to think of as a very good news. Yeah, Will?
Would you say putting a preposition on a verb a lot of times intensifies it? Kind of like I remember Paul saying in one of his epistles, you know, we are oppressed, but we are not, you know, overwhelmed. Using like almost the same verb, but then throwing on a preposition to it.
Yeah. It's a good question. It's unpredictable. You just can't assume. You'd probably have to look, you know, do a word study and look at the examples. Another example would be, is there always a difference between ginosko and epigenosko? And the answer is, I think, sometimes. Yeah. So it's a good question, but you probably can't assume it automatically. There are some verbs that actually come to have a different meaning, like, for instance, kata phroneo. You know, phroneo means to think about, see? Kata phroneo means despise, right? So sometimes it works, but you can't count on it always. Right. Yeah.
Would you say that this is testing the same way as peirazo? You could have used peirazo here?
I think he could have.
Same way?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, and it could be nothing more complicated than Matthew is just offering us the quotation in the Septuagint version. Right. So, yeah, but a good question. And unfortunately, language is probably more flexible. We can't count on it. You just got to check it out. So, good. Okay, verse 8. Palin paralambane auton ha diabolos, ace aras hypsilon leon, kai deik nusin auto, pasas tas basileas tu kosmu, kai ten duxan auton. We'll do verse 9. Kai apen auto, tauta soy, panta doso, eon pezon, pros cuneses moi. Again, note the historical presence. The devil takes him along unto a mountain, a really very high one, and he shows to him all the kingdoms of the world and, a second direct object, the glory of them. And he said to him, these things to you all I will give if, falling down, you worship me. And here, given the context, proskuneo probably should mean worship, right? So now the climactic test. What's interesting is that Satan here assumes that the son will worship somebody. And he's just trying to get him to worship him. And Jesus' answer is, I'm not worshiping you. I'm worshiping the Father. So it's really, it's a remarkable thing for this. I mean, we have our, well, never mind, that's theology. Okay, fine. So at the end we have a conditional sentence, which is a little unusual because normally the if clause precedes, right? Maybe there's a little bit kind of a stylistic emphasis here. Matthew gives us the if clause last. Falling down is probably one of these bang-bang participles. If you fall down and worship me. And contrary to Wallace, proskuneo can take a dative or an accusative object. I don't think it makes much difference, to be honest. So, and then just for the sheer thrill of it, let's finish the pericope, verse 10 and 11. Again, historical present, tate lege autoha Jesus, hipage satana, gegraptai gar kirion tante ansu proskuneses kai auto mano la treuses. tata afeisen auton ha diabolos kai idu, angeloi pros eothon kai die kanun auto. So back at verse 10 again. Then Jesus says to him, go away, Satan, for it stands written. And now this is also an imperatival future. You will worship the Lord your God, and you will serve him only. Then, verse 11, from afiemi, which means to leave alone in this case, present indicative active third singular, then the devil leaves him alone. And looky here, angels approached and from diakoneo, imperfect indicative active third plural, they began to serve or minister to him. Right. Okay, familiar story. Fairly bunch of indicatives, you know. The Greek isn't too hard. It's not like Hebrews or something, so it's a good day. We can all feel capable. And that's a good thing. Okay, very good. Lectionary lunch tomorrow. Hebrew club on Thursday. Sad to say, it doesn't get any better than that.